Welcome to day 184 of my Everyday Bible. This is Rita Langland, your host from Hidden with Christ Ministries in California. Today we will be reading from the book of 2 Kings, chapters 5 through 8. We are reading the New American Standard Bible this week. So beginning at 2 Kings, chapter 5, starting at verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. Now the Arameans had gone out in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Aram said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." He departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "And now, as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now and see how he is seeking a quarrel against me." It happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be clean." But Naaman was furious and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Then his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then, when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. When he returned to the man of God with all his company and came and stood before him, he said, "Behold now, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please take a present from your servant now." But he said, "As the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Naaman said, "If not, please let your servant at least be given 2 mule loads of earth, for your servant will no longer offer burnt offering, nor will he sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. In this matter, may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter." He said, "Go in peace." So he departed from him some distance. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, "Behold, my master has spared this Naaman the Aramean by not receiving from his hand what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him." So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw one running after him, he came down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" He said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, 'Behold, just now, two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes.'" Naaman said, "Be pleased to take two talents." And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothes and gave them to two of his servants, and they carried them before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand and deposited them in the house. And he sent the men away, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" And he said, "Your servant went nowhere." Then he said to him, "Did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Is it a time to receive money and to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever." So he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. Chapter 6. Now the sons of the prophet said to Elisha, "Behold now, the place before you where we are living is too limited for us. Please let us go to the Jordan, and each of us take from there a beam, and let us make a place there for ourselves where we may live." So he said, "Go." Then one said, "Please be willing to go with your servants." And he answered, "I shall go." So he went with them. And when they came to the Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one was felling a beam, the axe head fell into the water. And he cried out and said, "Alas, my master, for it was borrowed." Then the man of God said, "Where did it fall?" And when he showed him the place, he cut off a stick and threw it in there and made the iron float. He said, "Take it up for yourself." So he put out his hand and took it. Now the king of Aram was warring against Israel, and he counseled with his servants, saying, "In such and such a place shall be my camp." The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, saying, "Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Arameans are coming down there." The king of Israel sent to the place about which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, so that he guarded himself there more than once or twice. Now the heart of the king of Aram was enraged over this thing, and he called his servants and said, "Will you tell me which one of us is for the king of Israel?" One of his servants said, "No, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom." So he said, "Go and see where he is, that I may send and take him." And it was told him, saying, "Behold, he is in Dothan." He sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. Now when the attendant of the man of God had risen early and had gone out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was circling the city. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" So he answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Then Elisha prayed and said, "O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. When they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike this people with blindness, I pray." So he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Then Elisha said to them, "This is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek." And he brought them to Samaria. When they had come into Samaria, Elisha said, "O Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see." So the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. Then the king of Israel, when he saw them, said to Elisha, "My father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them?" He answered, "You shall not kill them. Would you kill those you have taken captive with your sword and with your bow? Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink and go to their master." So he prepared a great feast for them, and when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master. And the marauding bands of Arameans did not come again into the land of Israel. Now it came about after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, gathered all his army and went up and besieged Samaria. There was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver and a fourth of a cab of dove's dung for 5 shekels of silver. As the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried out to him, saying, "Help, my lord, O king." He said, "If the Lord does not help you, from where shall I help you? From the threshing floor, from the winepress?" And the king said to her, "What is the matter with you?" And she said, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and ate him. And I said to her on the next day, 'Give your son that we may eat him.' But she has hidden her son." When the king heard the words of the woman, he tore his clothes. Now he was passing by on the wall, and the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth beneath on his body. Then he said, "May God do so to me and more also if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on him today." Now Elisha was sitting in his house, and the elders were sitting with him. And the king sent a man from his presence. But before the messenger came to him, he said to the elders, "Do you see how this son of a murderer has sent to take away my head? Look, when the messenger comes, shut the door and hold the door shut against him. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him?" While he was still talking with them, behold, the messenger came down to him and said, "Behold, this evil is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?" Chapter 7. Then Elisha said, "Listen to the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord, tomorrow, about this time, a measure of fine flour will be sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel, in the gate of Samaria." The royal officer, on whose hand the king was leaning, answered the man of God and said, "Behold, if the Lord should make windows in heaven, could this thing be?" Then he said, "Behold, you will see it with your own eyes, but you will not eat of it." Now there were 4 leprous men at the entrance of the gate, and they said to one another, "Why do we sit here until we die? If we say, 'We will enter the city,' then the famine is in the city, and we will die there. And if we sit here, we die also. Now, therefore, come and let us go over to the camp of the Arameans. If they spare us, we will live. And if they kill us, we will but die." They arose at twilight to go to the camp of the Arameans. When they came to the outskirts of the camp of the Arameans, behold, there was no one there. For the Lord had caused the army of the Arameans to hear a sound of chariots and a sound of horses, even the sound of a great army, so that they said to one another, "Behold, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us." Therefore they arose and fled in the twilight and left their tents and their horses and their donkeys, even the camp just as it was, and fled for their life. When these lepers came to the outskirts of the camp, they entered one tent and ate and drank and carried from there silver and gold and clothes and went and hid them. And they returned and entered another tent and carried from there also and went and hid them. Then they said to one another, "We are not doing right. This day is a day of good news, but we are keeping silent. If we wait until morning light, punishment will overtake us. Now therefore, come, let us go and tell the king's household. So they came and called to the gatekeepers of the city, and they told them, saying, "We came to the camp of the Arameans, and behold, there was no one there, nor the voice of man, only the horses tied and the donkeys tied and the tents just as they were." The gatekeepers called and told it within the king's household. Then the king arose in the night and said to his servants, "I will now tell you what the Arameans have done to us. They know that we are hungry. Therefore, they have gone from the camp to hide themselves in the field, saying, 'When they come out of the city, we will capture them alive and get into the city.'" One of his servants said, "Please, let some men take 5 of the horses which remain, which are left in the city. Behold, they will be in any case like all the multitude of Israel who are left in it. Behold, they will be in any case like the multitude of Israel who have already perished. So let us send and see." They took, therefore, 2 chariots with horses, and the king sent after the army of the Arameans, saying, "Go and see." They went after them to the Jordan, and behold, all the way was full of clothes and equipment, which the Arameans had thrown away in their haste. Then the messengers returned and told the king. So the people went out and plundered the camp of the Arameans. Then a measure of fine flour was sold for 1 shekel, and 2 measures of barley for 1 shekel, according to the word of the Lord. Now the king appointed the royal officer on whose hand he leaned to have charge of the gate, but the people trampled on him at the gate, and he died just as the man of God had said, who spoke when the king came down to him. It happened just as the man of God had spoken to the king, saying, 2 measures of barley for 1 shekel and 1 measure of fine flour for 1 shekel will be sold tomorrow about this time at the gate of Samaria." Then the royal officer answered the man of God and said, "Now behold, if the Lord should make windows in heaven, could such a thing be?" And he said, "Behold, you will see it with your own eyes, but you will not eat of it." And so it happened to him, for the people trampled on him at the gate, and he died. Chapter 8. Now Elisha spoke to the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, "Arise and go with your household and sojourn wherever you can sojourn, for the Lord has called for a famine, and it will even come on the land for 7 years. So the woman arose and did according to the word of the man of God. And she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. At the end of the 7 years, the woman returned from the land of the Philistines, and she went out to appeal to the king for her house and for her field. Now the king was talking with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, "Please relate to me all the great things that Elisha has done." As he was relating to the king how he had restored to life the one who was dead, behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life appealed to the king for her house and for her field. And Gehazi said, "My lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son, whom Elisha restored to life." When the king asked the woman, she related it to him. So the king appointed for her a certain officer, saying, "Restore all that was hers and all the produce of the field from the day that she left the land even until now." Then Elisha came to Damascus. Now Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, was sick, and it was told him, saying, "The man of God has come here." The king said to Hazael, "Take a gift in your hand and go to meet the man of God and inquire of the Lord by him, saying, 'Will I recover from this sickness?'" So Hazael went to meet him and took a gift in his hand, even every kind of good thing of Damascus, 40 camels loads. And he came and stood before him and said, "Your son, Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, has sent me to you, saying, 'Will I recover from this sickness?'" Then Elisha said to him, "Go, say to him, 'You will surely recover.'" but the Lord has shown me that he will certainly die." He fixed his gaze steadily on him until he was ashamed, and the man of God wept. Hazael said, "Why does my Lord weep?" Then he answered, "Because I know the evil that you will do to the sons of Israel. Their strongholds you will set on fire, and their young men you will kill with the sword, and their little ones you will dash in pieces, and their women with child you will rip up." Then Hazael said, "But what is your servant, who is but a dog, that he should do this great thing?" And Elisha answered, "The Lord has shown me that you will be king over Aram." So he departed from Elisha and returned to his master, who said to him, "What did Elisha say to you?" And he answered, "He told me that you would surely recover." On the following day, he took the cover and dipped it in water and spread it on his face so that he died. And Hazael became king in his place. Now in the fifth year of Joram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Jehoshaphat being then the king of Judah, Jehoram the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, became king. He was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. He walked in the way of the kings of Israel, just as the house of Ahab had done, for the daughter of Ahab became his wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. However, the Lord was not willing to destroy Judah for the sake of David his servant, since he had promised him to give a lamp to him through his sons always. In his days, Edom revolted from under the hand of Judah and made a king over themselves. Then Joram crossed over to Zaire and all his chariots with him, and he arose by night and struck the Edomites who had surrounded him and the captains of the chariots, but his army fled to their tents. So Edom revolted against Judah to this day. Then Libnah revolted at the same time. The rest of the acts of Joram and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So Joram slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, and Ahaziah his son became king in his place. In the 12th year of Joram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Ahaziah the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, began to reign. Ahaziah was 22 years old when he became king, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Athaliah, the granddaughter of Omri, king of Israel. He walked in the way of the house of Ahab and did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab had done, because he was a son-in-law of the house of Ahab. Then he went with Joram, the son of Ahab, to war against Hazael, king of Aram, at Ramoth-Gilead, and the Arameans wounded Joram. So King Joram returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds which the Arameans had inflicted on him at Ramah when he fought against Hazael, king of Aram. Then Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Joram, the son of Ahab, in Jezreel because he was sick. This is the end of today's scripture reading. In today's devotional, I want to focus on one story that we heard today, and it's the very interesting story about Elisha the prophet, the fact that he was able to forewarn the king of Israel by divine revelation, because God would give him insight into the movements of an enemy army and where they would be camped against the king of Israel. And it was interesting to me that the king of the Arameans was so frustrated, because every time he would send his soldiers to a certain place, it was if someone knew ahead of time where they were going to be, and the king of Israel would manage to avoid the confrontation. And so he called his servants together, you heard in 2 Kings 6:11. Now the heart of the king of Aram was enraged over this thing, and he called his servants and said, "Will you tell me which one of us is for the king of Israel?" And then one of his servants said, "No, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom." So somehow or another, the Arameans were aware that there was this prophet in Israel who was able to know by divine revelation the movements of enemy troops against them, and therefore warn the king of Israel. And this frustrated this king of Aram every time he tried to go against them, but he would be defeated because they wouldn't be where he was going. So he wanted to know if there was a traitor in the camp. But instead he found out, no, there's a prophet in Israel. So the king sent his army to go and retrieve this prophet, Elisha. He heard that Elisha was staying in the town of Dothan, so he sent horses and chariots and a great army there. And they came by night and they surrounded the city with the intention of just retrieving out of that city one man, the biggest enemy of the king of Aram. It was Elisha the prophet. So the fascinating story is that Elisha's servant had risen early and gone out, and he was astonished when he saw an army with horses and chariots circling the city, and he was quite afraid when he saw this imposing sight that looked like big trouble. We heard his words. He said, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" And Elisha answers him, "Do not be afraid." He was obviously aware that his servant was fearful when he saw the sight. And then Elisha says something very profound when he tells him, "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And then the next verse is quite amazing. Elisha prayed and said, "O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the servant's eyes and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So I want to talk to you today about the implications of this story. The fact that we live in a dual world that requires two sets of eyes. The physical world is the world that servant was looking at when he saw the Aramean army surrounding the city. The physical world that we live in presents facts and evidence that we can observe with natural eyes and natural understanding, just like Elisha's servants could see when he looked at that enemy army surrounding them, or just like you can see when you look at your own troubling circumstances. Yet there exists simultaneously for you and for Elisha and his servant a spiritual reality where, in Elisha's case, he could see a number of angels surrounding him that was greater than the number of soldiers that made up that enemy army. Elisha prayed for God to give his servant eyes to see. Well, obviously, he already could see in the natural, but what he needed to be able to do was see in the spirit. And Elisha knew also by his own personal experience that there was more spiritual understanding available for his servant than he had already tapped into. And he desired that his servant, Elisha desired that disciple enter into a higher level of revelation where he could see in the spirit like Elisha could see. So Elisha prayed that God would give him that revelation. That's what we heard in verse 17 here of 2 Kings 6. Elisha prayed, "O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. He wasn't talking about his natural eyes. He could already see that way. It was talking about his spiritual eyes. I love that prayer. We can pray that prayer over ourselves. Paul the Apostle prayed that same way for the church. Because in Ephesians chapter 1, verses 17 to 23, he prayed that the church would receive an enlightenment, a revelation, so that we, the church, could have more revelation, more understanding of what God was doing in the Spirit. Here's what it says in Ephesians 1, verse 17 and 18. He's praying that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give to you a spirit of wisdom and of revelation in the knowledge of him. Then he goes on to say in verse 18, I pray. This is just like Elisha praying for his servant. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, so that you will know what is the hope of his calling, what are the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints, and what is the surpassing greatness of his power toward us who believe. So Paul prayed, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened. Elisha prayed to the Lord for his servant, and he said, open his eyes that he may see. They both prayed a similar prayer. Lord, open their eyes in the spirit. Open their spiritual eyes. They already have natural eyes. Open their spiritual eyes. We live in a dual world. There is the natural that we deal with every day, and there is the spirit world that exists simultaneously, side by side, but that we often don't look into, tap into, or are real aware of, except in extreme situations, perhaps, when we're crying out to God and we receive a word from God or get a touch from God. That's when we often tap into the spirit world, and yet it was available all the time, as Elisha knew and also as the Apostle Paul knew as well. When Paul prayed that way for the church, and it's a prayer for us today, his Ephesians 1 prayer, he knew that if the church of Jesus Christ could receive divine revelation on a daily basis, on an ongoing basis, that they, the church, would become undefeatable in every area of life. You may ask, well, what do you mean by revelation, or what do you mean by divine revelation? It essentially is something revealed by God to man. Or it means God's understanding imparted to man. I'm quite sure that you could use more divine revelation than you have been used to at this point in your life. I know for myself, I could definitely use more divine revelation, more of God's understanding imparted to me, more of God revealing to me things I need to know and things that he is doing. It's what God desires for all of his servants, all of his children. Elisha prayed for his servant that way. Paul prayed for the church that same way. I want to make a couple contrasts for you from this story just to drive home the point of how important and how precious and how powerful it is to be able to have your spiritual eyes open and the spirit of wisdom and revelation operational in your life. First of all, let me make these three contrasts about the spirit eyes and the natural eyes that are illustrated in this story. The man, the servant of Elisha, who could not see in the spirit, immediately experienced fear upon observing the negative or threatening circumstances that surrounded him and surrounded the prophet Elisha. And yet the man who could see in the spirit, which was the prophet Elisha, he experienced perfect peace. The first thing Elisha said to him was, "Do not fear." He wasn't afraid, and he didn't want his servant to be afraid. but his servant couldn't see in the spirit. So the first reaction he's going to have to negative circumstances arising was fear. It's the same with us. If you only can see in the natural, if the only thing that you're able to look at are natural circumstances in your life, and you can't see into the spirit that God is working, that God's moving on your behalf, that there's more with you than are with the enemy army, then you will experience fear when you look at those circumstances. And yet, Elisha knew there was more for him to see. And he had peace, and the man who could only see in the natural was experiencing fear. The second thing I want to observe is that the man who could see in the spirit knew exactly what to do. And he knew that by the spirit of wisdom and revelation. But the man who could not see in the spirit did not know what to do. He said, "Oh, alas, my master, what shall we do?" So it's very clear he did not know what to do with this circumstance that they were facing. Elisha knew exactly what to do. And the third contrast between the man who could see in the spirit and the man who could not see in the spirit, the man who could not see in the spirit had no power to deal with the situation. But the man who could see in the spirit, Elisha, had power and authority to deal with it successfully. So what did he do? He prayed in the authority that he had been given by God, strike this people with blindness. So he struck them with blindness. Then Elisha told the army, this isn't the way that you want to go, and this isn't the city. Follow me and I'll bring you to the man whom you seek. And he brought them to Samaria and to the king of Samaria. And then he was able to pray for the Lord to open the eyes of the men. And by that point, they're in the midst of Samaria, surrounded by the Israeli army and the king of Israel, who also doesn't know what to do and asks, "My father, shall I kill him? What do I do?" And of course, Elisha answered wisely, "Don't kill them. You wouldn't kill people you've taken captive. Feed them and then send them back to their master, the king of Aram." And so the king of Israel, of course, obeyed the prophet Elisha, prepared a feast for them, and then sent them away. And then they never again had problems with the Arameans, who were so obviously moved by the fact that they could not stand against a single man. The entire army had come against Elisha, and they were not able to defeat him. They weren't even able to take him captive. They were the ones captive to blindness until Elisha said otherwise. So the marauding bands of Arameans did not come again into the land of Israel after that supernatural encounter with the prophet Elisha. But my point today is simply this. God wants us to have eyes to see in the spirit as well as our eyes in the natural. And we need to desire this. We need to recognize we do live in a dual world, spirit and body, or physical and spiritual worlds. And God has no intention for you to deal with what happens to you in your life simply in the natural or in the physical. People who don't know God do that every day. God doesn't want you to have to lean on your own natural understanding. Quite the contrary. He says, do not lean on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge God, and he'll direct your path. God wants us to be people who have eyes to see in the spirit as well as in the natural. And if you want that, if you desire that, then God is more than desiring to give it to you. But I will tell you, he looks for people who are hungry for the things of God. He looks for people who have a hunger for spiritual things more than they have a hunger for natural things. Are you willing to fast and pray and ask God to give you eyes to see? Then I would encourage you to do so, because God pays attention to the diligent seeker. In fact, the Word of God tells us he's a rewarder of the diligent seeker. And if you will be one who longs to have eyes to see in the Spirit, then pray the prayer that Paul the Apostle prayed in Ephesians chapter 1 for the church. Pray it over your own life. I do it myself. And it says here in Ephesians 1, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, meaning open the eyes of my heart. You can pray that. And then pray also, may God give to you a spirit of wisdom and of revelation. Those two prayers are here in Ephesians 1, 17 and 18. You can pray them over yourself and say, God, would you give me a spirit of wisdom and revelation and the knowledge of yourself, and give me eyes to see in the Spirit, open the eyes of my heart, enlighten the eyes of my heart so I will know what is the hope of your calling and what are the riches of your glory and what is the surpassing greatness of your power toward me who believes. This is a powerful prayer to pray. If Paul the Apostle thought it was worthy of praying over the church of Jesus Christ, it's a prayer you should grab hold of and pray over yourself on a daily basis. And that way the Lord will hear that prayer. He longs to find people who hunger for him in such a way that they will cry out to have eyes to see in the Spirit and ears to hear what the Spirit of the Lord is saying. So I encourage you to do that, so that you too can have your eyes open to the spirit world as well as your eyes open in the natural world. God bless you and give you a victorious week.